Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 12th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the Senate may yet debate the farm bill this week. If not, it'll have to wait until after Thanksgiving. Big oil is moving or moving in, depending upon your view, on the ethanol front. And a new think tank says global warming will hurt agricultural production. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. And I'll tell you about the redoubled efforts of the U of I to service the agricultural needs of Southern Illinois. Hey, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss today's global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Monday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby wheat down a penny at $7.61 a bushel, and the March contract at $7.81.5, down 3 cents. July futures for next year, 5.5 lower at $6.76. December corn futures, $3.79, down 7.75. The March at $3.96, down 8. In the May contract, 7.5 cents lower at $4.06.25. December futures for next year at $4.24.5 a bushel. December corn in Chicago down 7 cents for the day for 2008. November soybeans this year at $10.32.75, down 10 and a quarter. January futures at $10.46.25, down 9 and 3 quarters. And the March futures at $10.61, down 9.5 cents. New crop 2008 November futures at $9.82.75, down 6 and 3 quarters today. December bean meal futures off $1.70 at $2.80.10. December bean oil at $44.46, down 62 for the afternoon. December live cattle futures from the CME Group, down 40 cents, $95.10 the settlement price. February futures for the live cattle at $97.95, down 37 and 1/2. November feeder cattle at $108.42.5, up 47.5 cents. January futures at $108.97.5, settled 95 higher. December lean hog futures $52.55, down $1.35 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, crude oil trading the nearby December contract at $94.44 a barrel, down $1.88 at this hour. January futures down $1.99 at $93.31. The CRB index at 349.60, down 4.94. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,125, down just about, or rather up just about 80 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Outline the trading floor for me today, please.
Well, sort of the same old theme as before, following the so-called outside markets with crude oil and metals down sharply most of the session. It sort of limited the buying enthusiasm in the grain pits, per se, so it'll be interesting to see how the overnight trade follows here or not. There has been that mentality up one day, down the next, so it's going to be important for the grain sector to sort of bounce here in Tuesday's trade, get a turnaround Tuesday type of action to sort of keep it in position to hold together here. The key points probably in the grain market to watch will be December corn futures at 375 and these beans near today's lows, these January's at 1034, 1035. Those are going to be key support levels to try to stay above. If we go much below that, that could probably spell more liquidation. When you step back and look at the big picture, several technical analysts was looking for some strength going into mid to late November. Time-wise, we're just about there. Price-wise, we're getting close to some upside objectives some of the technicians had. So it's going to be kind of critical to keep an eye on the grain market here this week, next week. Especially as a producer, we're at some lofty levels, some all-time highs that you can receive for this time of year for some of these contracts. So it's a great financial interest. Stay tuned here and see what develops.
Oftentimes you talk about not dollars and cents per bushel, but dollars and cents per acre. Have you started to continue to run the numbers and looking at next year's crop to see where farmers might stand at this point?
Yeah, it varies greatly from producer to producer and what you include on your cost of production. But for the most part, even plugging in higher input costs, higher cash rent values, we're finding that a lot of these guys are coming up with a still profitable go corn, as much as $30 to $50 an acre. I know it varies highly from individual to individual and operation to operation, but for the most part, these price levels, that's where it's at. But you know, as far as ability to obtain credit and a lot of other factors, some mentality in some areas is to go heavier back to beans. But it's an individual decision, and it's going to be quite interesting to see where we end up next spring. Now, the reading between the lines, as a producer, that being said, your risk is to the downside greatly, because if this is high as we go price-wise and we take corn back to $3 and beans back down to $8, it's going to be tremendous amount of disaster in the countryside, because letting these prices get away and after paying these high input costs to put the crop in the ground, it could be devastating not taking advantage of these higher prices.
Yeah, so if we get corn to 3 or 320 on the futures market and we're looking at, what, 280 to 305 or something along that line, Central Illinois cash bids, what do the numbers then start to turn out like, rather than a $30 to $50 income per acre? Have you figured the loss?
No, if not, we've just been optimistic figuring profit. And we probably, that's a good observation. We'll probably need to work on that, because it could be tremendous. Because you know, the number one thing is, well, I need higher prices to offset the higher costs. Well, that's true. But two, we got to remember your input costs are front loaded here. You pay for it up front, and if you wait, don't take advantage of these higher prices, then you know it's going to be devastating on the back end. But I tell you, it can change the bottom line on the cash flow statement in a hurry.
So here are a couple of things that farmers probably are thinking about now, which is, and they always think the same thought is, well, how much can I sell for next year to begin with? What do I think I can guarantee? Some of them will say, well, how much do I not have sold for this year, and can I leave it in the bin and make it as a next year sale? I know you're not supposed to do that, but that's what they'll be, as long as they're not collecting a government payment. I suppose it doesn't make too much difference. But tell me what some strategies might be to protect that income from the corn and the soybean, even from the wheat point of view.
Well, there are a tremendous amount of different ways to go, because everybody's different. Everybody's going different ways. Just because your neighbor does one thing does not mean that's correct for you. Number one, a lot of this crop was forward priced way ahead of time. Probably the most conservative approach was guys bought revenue policies or insurance policies and went ahead and market the grain knowing they were covered or insured, per se. So the rest of the crowd is pretty well moved to cash sales up to 50-75%. And probably looking at getting a good chunk of this stuff cleaned up here this winter. Now, as we look forward in here, see, that's going to be the interesting thing to watch, is to where this market goes and what type of marketing approach producers take. Once again, we feel producers will wait and not market a whole lot until we get into this winter and see what type of insurance products are offered and what the cost is and what type of guarantee there is. From a simple point of view, we feel that a lot of this bullish news is going to be built in up front here. We're going to continue to see a lot of outside money come into the marketplace to hopefully run the market higher. And two, we're going to see a lot of concern about buying for acres. So therefore, the function of the market is to stay firm in this winter until these acres are guaranteed. And once these acres are guaranteed in the spring, we feel that if there's no weather problems next summer, that we could be in a position to see some downside risk. So whether it's forward contract some of the crop, whether it's hedge to arrive or hedge the futures or buy puts or go with insurance products, either or all of those, we feel something needs to be done before you go to the field this spring to protect your downside.
Tell me a little bit about the livestock side of the market, and maybe if you can talk about some of your clients and the problems they might be having sourcing hay at this point.
Well, that's been feed costs in general is really surprised the hog complex with the amount of hogs we have around. Hogs continue to move lower here on ample numbers. Seasonally, we should be at a low in here. Technically, we've had a good turn. So it's a matter of time in here to make sure the cash market holds and see a seasonal up as we go into this winter here. As far as the beef sector here, it's been a sort of a give and take, especially on the hay side equation, as you mentioned there. A lot of this hay is going for a good premium. But as far as the beef goes, the main concern as a buyer or on the retail side is, as we go into next year, we feel we're going to see more exports being opened up. And also, too, when you look at the numbers in general, the cattle and feed and cattle inventory, as we move into April or June of next summer, we're going to run into a much tighter situation, which tells us we're going to see higher beef values next summer.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
What a dynamic market. There's been a lot of money made up moves and a lot of money being made on down moves if you're long and vice versa. It's quite a roller coaster in through here. And we'll continue to stress to have some type of plan and try to stick with it because the dynamics of this market is going to be sharply up and sharply down.
We appreciate you being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Monday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says across the two-state region tonight, in the northern part of Illinois, the skies will be partly cloudy. In the northern part of Indiana and in central Illinois, mostly cloudy skies, some showers, a few thunderstorms, but those will happen mostly before midnight. In central and Indiana and the south, cloudy with some widespread showers and thunderstorms. Lows will range this evening from 40 in far northwestern Illinois to 57 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north and central sections, partly to mostly sunny. In the south, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow will range from 58, says Ed, in the far northwestern part of Illinois, to 68 in the far south. Dave Dickey is here now. He has a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Farm Bill optimists continue to hold out hope that the Senate will get back to floor debate on the bill this week, despite several negative factors, including that GOP lawmakers are divided over whether to support the bill or a threatened presidential veto, Democratic leadership attempts to limit amendments, and both sides of the aisle facing tremendous political pressure from non-traditional ag groups. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid may file a motion to limit debate to 30 hours. It would require 60 votes for approval. Reid has enlisted Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin on Tuesday morning to make the 30-hour pitch to lobbyists, who would then pressure GOP lawmakers prior to a cloture vote. If the cloture motion fails, it will halt action on the farm bill until lawmakers return from Thanksgiving recess on December 10th. Big oil companies increasingly are looking at making ethanol and other biofuels using advanced feedstocks and technologies. Oil giant Royal Dutch Shell has extended an agreement with Codexis, a California-based biotechnology company, to develop cellulosic ethanol technology. Meanwhile, Colorado-based Range Fuels Incorporated has announced plans to convert wood to ethanol on a commercial basis starting in 2009. A U.S. think tank says if nothing is done to reduce global warming, that world agricultural productivity will decline between 3 and 16% from current levels by 2080. A study authored by the Peterson Institute for International Economics says developing countries have the most to lose from global warming because most are located nearer the equator and already have temperatures near or above crop tolerance levels. South Korea plans a two-phase removal of its current ban on U.S. beef. The first phase would follow rules set by the International Animal Health Agency, OIE. The second phase would be based on South Korean efforts to overcome consumer and producer resistance to U.S. beef. When fully implemented, the U.S. will regain more than 80% of the market share that it had when the ban first went into effect in 2003. And Agricultural Research Service scientists are designing a southern strategy to protect the U.S. from UG99 wheat stem rust disease, which has spread from Africa to the Arabian Peninsula. The strain spreads by wind-blown fungal spores, and it can survive in southern U.S. winter conditions. Scientists are counting on planting of higher-resistant wheat varieties in the southern U.S. to prevent the disease from gaining a foothold on U.S. soil. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, the University of Illinois is redoubling its efforts in the southern part of the state. I'll have more from the Dixon Springs Field Research Farm. The U of I's Dixon Springs Field Research Facility sits among the trees of the Shawnee National Forest in the knotty landscape of southern Illinois. It is a place often called Little Egypt because of its remote and isolated feel. Since 1938, the land grant in Illinois has reached deep into this region, and its agricultural research site, says Extension agronomist Steve Ebelhardt.
When Dixon Springs was first established, this was a very impoverished area, and what they tried to do is try to come in here with a research program to try to bring productivity back to the soil here. It was highly eroded soil at the time. Very poor management back in the 30s, around the Great Depression. And so the emphasis on the center early on was to develop pasture management, better pasture management for cattle, and also to improve the soil situation, go into less tillage, more terracing type work, improve the fertility of the soil, and basically kind of build up the economy by building up the soil in this area.
The belief that the soil, the land, is the rock upon which the Illinois economy rests has been long held. In fact, it is inscribed on the face of Davenport Hall on the quad at the U of I in Urbana-Champaign. The inscription reads, "The wealth of Illinois is in her soil, and her strength lies in its intelligent development." The hall was dedicated in 1901. The U of I's Dixon Springs Research Farm has been working under that premise since its inception and developed many production methods that are still in use today, including no-till.
Right. During our heydays in the 60s and 70s, no-tillage research was developed here in Dixon Springs, and that has greatly curtailed soil erosion in the area, and we continue to do the emphasis on no-till research in corn, soybean, and wheat production. But then we've also started dedicating a lot of our work to specialty crops and so forth in the area that give the farmers an additional source of income.
Illinois has spent the last 3 years evaluating the impact of the Dixon Springs Research Facility, hoping to further focus its direction. Again, Steve Ebelhar.
Farming is very difficult in southern Illinois. It's our soils down here differ from that in Champaign and the northern part of the state because we have much lower organic matter, a lot more root-restricting layers, clay pans, frangipans, and poor water-holding capacity. So it's very difficult, I think, for a lot of farmers to make a a good living just with row crops and grain crops. So we see a lot of diversity in this area, a lot of additional income from, you know, various horticultural crops or some specialized fruit crops, strawberries, for example. But also we see a lot of cattle in this area because of the rolling terrain and unsuitable land for row crops, and you see a lot of pasture land and so forth.
A rolling, majestic, beautiful, and difficult landscape, one that requires its natives to specialize and diversify simultaneously. The University of Illinois has already begun the process of defining how best to protect the soils of southern Illinois while reaping economic and even pastoral benefits. It is not the land grant reaching down from Champaign, but about giving southern Illinois a tool, the Dixon Springs Research Farm, to develop its own path. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
On a Monday afternoon, time now to take a look at what's happening in the world of the cash grain market. And Greg Johnson of the Andersons joins us from here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
We talked just a little bit with Kurt Kimmel earlier about the idea that higher prices for the coming year will be or could be rolled forward. I know farmers will take a look at what's been happening in the charts, or at least remember that the same cry was made last fall, and we climbed in the new crop December for this year anyway, the current December contract out of October and through November and December and January and February and topped out somewhere in that late February, early March time frame. And we went from, I don't know, in that as low as 270 at this time of year in October, November. We were in the 335, 340 range, and we just kept on climbing all the way through. And they may not be, they might be reticent to make sales at this point because they missed the boat some on some of those early sales last year. What do you think about cash prices today and new crop sales for the coming year?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. You have to remember where we started from a year ago, you know, and the market did have to buy, you know, 10 to 12 million more acres of corn. And I think there was, we've never had to do that before. So the market didn't know how high we needed to go to buy those acres. And even looking back before October, if you go back to August, we were 2 cents away from an LDP last year, believe it or not, on August 16th. I think futures were 240 and basis was about 35 under. That was 205 cash. So, yes, we've definitely rallied. I think now that we've rallied and seen how much $4 corn will buy as far as acres are concerned, you know, the market is, you know, has some idea what it takes to keep acres. But we didn't have $10 beans last year either, $9 to $10 beans. We had $7 beans last year. So, you know, we're still going to play out this acreage game all along. And could we go a lot higher if we don't get the corn acres? Sure. Or if we have weather problems. But on the other hand, if you remember last year, corn was 4.25, and then the acreage report came out, and about 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, we were down to 350. So we saw a 75-cent drop in corn prices, and they did come back. But corn can go down from 4.25 on the board, and just as easily as it can go up. So since nobody knows what the weather is going to be and nobody knows what the acreage number is going to be, it's probably a good idea to get some corn sold ahead and have a plan to you know, protect some sales if you get too aggressive and get too much sold ahead.
And if they were to sell corn, soybeans, and wheat tonight at your elevator, what might they get?
They would get $3.72 for cash corn, $3.82 for January, and $3.99 for next fall right out of the field. Drop below $4 today. On the beans, $10.18 for cash, $10.31 for Jan, and $9.48 for next fall.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Monday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Lake Springfield remains closed to boaters while officials try to measure the effects of a weekend power plant explosion on the lake. They say initial tests found the water still safe for drinking. The series of explosions severely damaged city water, light, and power's generating plant Saturday evening. The mayor of Springfield says it may take tens of millions of dollars to fix the facility. Officials plan an autopsy tomorrow for Indiana death row inmate Norman Timberlake. He died over the weekend. Authorities suspect he died of natural causes. Timberlake was to be executed last January, but his execution was blocked by the Indiana Supreme Court. The chairman of a bipartisan commission studying Indiana's property tax woes plans to make significant recommendations in a commission meeting tomorrow. State Senator Luke Kenley says the suggestions could lead to homeowners' property tax bills being cut in half. Kenley says many of the recommendations he'll make to the State Tax and Financing Policy Commission are based on a plan that Governor Mitch Daniels proposed earlier this month. While Daniels has said his plan would help cut the average Hoosier homeowner's tax bill by more than a third, Kenley says his proposal would make even deeper cuts. The meeting tomorrow of the five-member tax commission caps a series of discussions that have focused on the state's property tax system. Two Republican candidates in Illinois' 18th District congressional race are differing vocally over certain foreign policy issues. Peoria State Representative Aaron Schock says the U.S. should allow Taiwan to gain nuclear weapons to neutralize threats from China. He also calls for fund freedom fighter groups against Iran. His opponent, Jim McConaughey, calls Schock's comments irresponsible and evidence of poor leadership, saying diplomacy is a better route to take. The two and John Morris are running to replace Congressman Ray LaHood. A terrorism suspect is trying to persuade a Miami jury that sinister discussions he had with a man claiming Al-Qaeda connections about destroying Chicago's Sears Tower were nothing more than a big lie. Narcile Batiste testified last week in the Liberty City 7 terror conspiracy trial that some of his inspiration came from Hollywood war movies and not Islamic extremist ideology. He says he never intended to destroy the Sears Tower and knew it was all a lie to get money. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana on a Monday afternoon. We're joined by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Kind of a dreary day here, but a little on the warm side for this time of year.
Yeah, what we're seeing right now are unseasonably warm temperatures out ahead of a cold front that's going to be passing through. However, your temperature only cooled down a few degrees for tomorrow, not in any way a strong cold front. With actually the next or stronger cold front comes up during the middle portion of this week, but that will just cool temperatures back down to more normal levels, bring another little round of precipitation, but we still don't see anything significantly heavy across sections of the central or eastern Midwest.
I'm a bit interested in what will be happening in Kansas City on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of this week. Dave Dickey and I will be making the trek to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention there.
Well, Todd, it looks like the timing of your trip is very, very good. And overall here, dry conditions during your trip there to Kansas City later on this week. And temperatures kind of variable. I think you're going to start off a little bit on the cool side on Thursday morning. However, temperatures will be warming up, and specifically by Thursday afternoon, Friday, highs climbing into the 60s and maybe even 70s by Friday.
I'd like to have sunshine on the way back Saturday and on the way out Wednesday as I cross Missouri. It's a beautiful drive towards St. Joe from Hannibal. We'll leave that one for just a bit and talk about the South American weather forecast, where I suspect they want a little sunshine so they can continue to plant.
Yeah, and actually some areas could use maybe a little bit more precipitation to allow some more planting to take place, but you're talking a few isolated pockets in the far northeastern sections of Brazil. But overall, Brazil has significantly improved this month due to the increase in rainfall across much of Brazil here, and overall there's no significant issues of note as planting continues. Down across Argentina, there are a couple issues to discuss, nothing that critical, but the region is an unseasonably cold pattern, which looks to persist throughout the middle portion of November, and that's going to slow down crop development, which is just something to watch here longer term. Not any kind of big issue, but certainly you don't want to go into the heart of summer with any kind of lag in crop development, especially if you run into any kind of significant heat waves. Also, we do have one dry pocket in Argentina to talk about, and that's in the central and southern acreage in Cordoba in the western portion of their grain belt. And coming up here, there's really no signs of any significant rains in the that area. There's going to be a few frontal passages. That's actually, those fronts bring in the colder than normal temperatures to the region, but they look relatively dry as they pass through the region, so no significant precip there and thus no real improvement in soil moisture in that dry pocket of Argentina.
We appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Todd.
Thank you much. That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Monday afternoons, and that is today's marketing report. Join us tomorrow at 8:49 for our pre-opening report. And remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, the cash grain report, the weather right there on the web. Just go to willag.org. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.